I used to know one, and she came back to the States about the same time I did. And she was up there in that Letterman General Hospital. But she said she was going to give her baby up for adoption. And I remember, because she was a Catholic, and a Catholic priest came in there to talk to her. And he asked her, you know, why? He says, you know, he said, you're a pretty smart woman and everything. He says, how did this happen? And she says, oh, Father, she said, in those jungles, you don't know what it's like. And he said, she said, you forget you're a human.
Oh, that's how she got pregnant, huh?
Well, what kind of facility did you live in when you were in the countdown? Was it tents or did you...
They were makeshift. Partly they were tents and partly they were sort of... Like they had like prefabricated stuff, I guess, with the tops up here with canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had these little army cots to sleep on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it, the weather wasn't so bad, but we got a lot of rain. I remember, that's what I hated, you know. We used to have to take our little shovels and dig a trench around our tent, you know, or the thing where we lived. So the water wouldn't come in.
Yeah.
And we'd be out there and we had raincoats and everything. And we were out there Christmas time, I remember, 1943. And it didn't seem like Christmas, you know. I didn't see no snow or anything, but it rained. And the mail was late or so they couldn't get through or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we could, all night long, we could hear these guns, you know, boom, boom. These are just continually, you know. After a while, it sort of gets on your nerves, you know.
Oh, I think it's exciting.
And, well, to me, I always, it would just quiet down so I can get some sleep or something. And then everybody was kind of disappointed because we didn't get no Christmas cards or nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, that's when I really felt, you know, homesick because up until then it didn't bother me about my parents or anything. But all of a sudden I thought, gee, my parents forgot me, you know. They didn't even send me nothing, you know. I thought, not even a letter, you know. And all the time they had, you know, but it didn't get there.
They'd gotten their letters.
Some or other that our mail was held up and or the planes couldn't get through or something. And of course they tried to give us a Christmas dinner, which was kind of and we didn't get it till 2 days after Christmas. It was they brought in some turkeys or something. They tried to make it I think it was the guys that worked in the mess hall. They try to decorate up the tables and everything, but it didn't, I don't know. Well, everybody made the best of it.
Oh, yeah.
I used to think it was the guys that were really in the hospital and all shot up and everything. I thought, they're not enjoying Christmas, so why should I, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, feeling that way, it kind of made up for my...
what was the attitude of most of the women working there? How did most of you feel about what you were doing?
Oh, it got bad after a while. At first, you know, well, I guess when I first went in, well, being in these BIA schools and having to live with other women and all that, I was used to that. But some of those girls that came, you know, had never been in this situation. It was something new to them. They had to get used to being close, you know. I guess that's the way people feel when they're in prison too. You don't have no privacy, you know. It was okay, but after, when we were there, so after a certain length of time, and there really wasn't any recreation, you know, because they had to, they would show movies and at the PX, but after a while, we got tired of going to the movies. And they try to have a dance, you know. It never worked out too good. So there was nothing we could really do. So after a while, some of the girls, they started getting kind of, I remember there was one girl, she was a major. She got in a fight with one of them, the other girl, over some guy that she was interested in. And things like this were, you know,
a fist fight or just a verbal fight?
Oh, a fist fight. Well, they pulled each other's hair and rolled around on the ground.
How many of you were in one garret?
There were about 30 of us.
Oh, really? And all these were large then?
Well, in one tent was about 10 of us, you know, but there were three, but we were considered a regiment, I guess, you know, a company.
But there were 10 of you living under the one roof.
But see, we weren't always there at the same time.
We'd be on duty
or something, and then we took turns, like we had shifts.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Kind of, what was a typical day like for you?
Well, most of the time I was on shift at night, so I slept in the daytime, which wasn't... Well, I learned to sleep under all kinds of conditions.
Yeah.
But at night, I was over there in the hostel, and I don't know, it's... When you're busy doing something, I think that time goes by so fast. But after a while, it seems like they start to drag out. I guess you're always getting time. And that, I don't know, if I'd been there a couple more weeks, I might have gone kind of. I'd been ready for what they call Section 8, you know, but that's one of because the Red Cross used to come in there. That was kind of a big joke because somebody was telling me, you know, oh, what do you do for the war effort? Oh, we knitted sweaters and socks for the soldiers and all that. You know, they used to sell those to the servicemen. You know, they weren't given to them, you know. So nobody liked the Red Cross. And like they say, they used to do so much, but there was one soldier, I think something happened at home with his wife. He was trying to get emergency fuel. And this was when I was in Fort Bliss, Texas. He lived out here in Pasadena. And he had a hitchhike, he said, because the Red Cross wouldn't help him. And one time before, he said they helped him. They loaned him $50. And he said, you know, he said, when payday came, they were right there to collect that $50. So I know a lot of servicemen in World War II that didn't have no love for the Red Cross. So I don't know what they did or anything. I had never known too much about the Red Cross until then. The only contact I had with them was, they were the ones that contacted me when my brother was killed.
Now you were in New Caledonia at the time. And they sent you a telegram?
No, there was a representative there, and I guess they got a call or, I don't know how, but a cablegram or something.
And they came and spoke to you?
It was a man that came, and he, said he wanted to talk to me, and I guess he thought I would just go to pieces or something, so he kind of tried to ease it over, you know. But I knew right away something was wrong, you know. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't call me in like that. So that was my only contact with them over there. Then when I was back here, I went home on a furlough, and I got into, I think it was Butte, Montana, on a train. And the Red Cross women were out there. They had cigarettes and apples and oranges and coffee and candy bars for the servicemen that got off the train. And she told me, she said, oh, you're entitled to a happy. She said, you know, you're one of the first Indians we've had come through here. She said, usually we get a lot of Indian fellows, but he said, they never stop here, she said, to talk to us or anything. And I thought to myself, well, I wouldn't have stopped to talk either, but you were standing right in front of me. I think I took an apple and a Hershey bar and something and thanked her.
Were you the only Indian woman in your regiment in New Caledonia?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel sort of isolated because of that?
No, you know, that was another funny thing. When I first went in and when I left, and Angie and I got separated,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up in Fort Bliss, and here I was, and this outfit that we had started off with, see, they, from basic training, they sent us all to different things.
Mm-hmm.
So there were only about four from my regular outfit that mm-hmm. was with me. And there were some others that joined that we didn't know who they were. Well, we got acquainted afterwards, but one night they were all sitting around in a barracks. They're talking, you know. And they were talking about, you know, California and all this and that. And this girl, she was a French girl. Her name was Jeanette Liberal. And she was from New York City. That's all I knew. But they were talking, and she made this remark, you know. She said, oh, she says, I am so sick and tired of all this. She said, for all I care, they can give it back to the Indians, she said, you know.
Mm.
And some girl in a crowd, you know, looks at, they all kind of turned, and I guess they didn't know how I was going to take it. I was just sitting there, and it just kind of, you know, got, you know, I didn't expect it, you know. So I just said, sure, Jeanette, I said, we'll take it back. I said, maybe just desert, but I said, it's our land. And I said, that's what we're fighting for. So I said, we'll take it back. And she got all embarrassed, and, you know. But that was so funny, because by the time we came out here to San Francisco, she and I were the best of friends. And I found out that she was kind of a rich gal, because she used to be a fashion editor of the Harper's Magazine.
Hmm.
And I guess she had a you know, big position, you know. Because one day we were sent detail, you know. So they sent a group of us, you know, to clean the bathrooms or something. So the sergeant is standing there, and she's telling, you know, you two go and do this, and you do this and that. Well, she tells Jeanette, you know, you and this other girl. She said, you get a scrub brush and a bucket, and she said, you go and clean the latrines. She said, so Jeanette looks at her, and she looks at me, and she said, what did she say? And I said, to clean those, you know, the commodes there. She said, you mean I got to stick my hand down in there? And I said, yeah. And she says, my God, she says, back in New York, I had a maid to do this. You know, she said, I said, no, you're in the Army, not Jeanette.
Things are changed.
But she still didn't believe it, you know. She thought there must be. So she tells the sergeant, she says, come here. She says, how do we clean this? She said, and she says, take the rag and stick it in that water. And she says, wipe up. And she said, you mean I have to stick my hand down in there? She said, that's right. She said, we used to laugh about that, because she says, boy, she was, I grieved. She said, you know. And I told her, I said, well, I thought I was stupid.
Did she go overseas with you then?
Mm-hmm.
I'll see you again over there, too.
But I made a lot of good friends. And, you know, it seemed as though we were all thrown together like that, more or less. You get to know one another, and everybody's the same. Nobody thinks of, you know, oh, she's this and that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I noticed at the time, World War II, they separated the blacks. You know.
So there were no black women?
Mm-mm.
They were in
the place that I saw them at was Fort Des Moines when we went out there. But they had their own barracks. They had their own mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
They even had their own recreation hall.
Hmm.
And their own place to go see the movies and system.
Hmm. How did that, what did you think about that?
Well, at the time, it didn't, I didn't think too much of it because I didn't know too much about what was going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I only knew that the blacks were kind of discriminated against, but then I thought, well, we were too, so, you know, I didn't.
But didn't it seem odd that that you were still considered, you know, with everyone else, and yet they were?
Well, you know what we thought, Angie and I used to talk about it, you know, and she says, do you suppose that if it really came down to it, she said, because I said, I don't think they didn't know where to put us. So she says, well, they could have put us with the blacks, huh? She said, and I said, well, maybe they were trying to be polite. She said, well, there are only two of us here, you know. We have our own little barracks and our own little mess hall. And that would have been neat, that's what you know, really.
Were there any other Indian men that you ever saw at all?
Yeah, well, after after we got to be part of the regular army, and then we went down to Fort Bliss, I ran into one of my cousins. He was a lieutenant in the Air Corps, and he was there with us. So I went to visit his family one weekend, which was nice. And then when I came out here, over here used to be Marchfield, the air base, and then they had Camp Hong. And I ran into a lot of the Indian boys that had gone to school, at half school with me. Mm-hmm. So it got, you know, of course, if they'd find out, like somebody would tell them, you know, oh, Christine is out there somewhere. So right away, you know, they'd look me up, you know. And so every weekend, you know, there'd be somebody, you know, they'd be calling me to the day room, you know. Somebody here to see you, you know. And I remember one of the girls, there were three of us that roomed together. She said, Christine, she said, where do you find all these nice tall guys? She says, you know. I said, what do you mean tall guys? You know, she said, there's two of them, best looking Indian guys over there. She said, they're over 6 feet tall. She said, I thought, who could they be? So I went over there, and it was two of the kids I went to school with. They were from Montana. So we went out. I remember we came out to the pike here. Right. We thought we were really having fun. So I ran into a lot of the boys, but not too many women.
Hmm.
Although I heard quite a few joined up after, you know. But it was like they separated us so much, you know. It was always like one, and they never put us all together.
Hmm.
You know, after I came back from New Caledonia, I just stayed out here up and down the coast here. I came back here to Camp Ross.
How long have you been there? How long have you been in New Caledonia?
Oh, about. Let's see, we were there November, December, January, February, March. We came back in April, so it was about 6 months.
What, were you in contact with your parents a lot of the time?
Yeah, we used to get V-mail, those little tiny letters that they're like a photostatic copy, and they were free. And we used to send those all the time.
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to write me nice long letters, but it took time to get there. Oh, she would worry if I didn't write.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'd have to write her all the time, and every chance I got, you know, so she wouldn't worry too much.
What kind of things did you tell her mothers, though?
I didn't tell her nothing about what was going on because I didn't want her to worry.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd tell her, you know, different things that I saw that was, you know, different. And like I would say today, you know, we went to see a film, you know, and I really enjoyed it, you know, stuff like that. So she thought I was
having a good time.
That it must not be that bad,
yeah.
You know.
Where was your other brother at this time?
He was up in Aleutian Islands.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
My other one that got killed, he was killed in North Africa. And I guess it was after we came back. I was up there in San Francisco, and that's when I ran into my husband. I just like that all of a while. He says, "You remember me?" He said, on that ship, he said, you know, and I didn't really remember him, you know. And I met a lot of the sailors, but that was my trouble. I could never remember names. But I thought, you know, yeah, I did see him somewhere before.
Now, was he a Native American?
No, he was non-Indian. He was Italian and German.
Hmm.
His father was a German, and his mother was Italian. And that's when his mother, she was the first time she saw me. Because I used to be real skinny, you know. "Oh my goodness," she says, "we're going to have to fatten her up." She was real outspoken.
So you were still in the service when you met your husband then?
Yeah. And we got married here in Long Beach.
Oh.
Because his ship came down to Long Beach. They were going back and forth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Between San Francisco and
San Diego and Long Beach. Oh. So he was telling me that they were going to be in Long Beach for a couple of weeks or something. And I was still in the service then, you know, so by that time, they told me that I could get a release or get a discharge if I wanted it, because my father had written that. He contacted the Red Cross. That was it. My mother had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And this is strange, because I guess it was all that, she must have worried her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's still alive, you know, too. And my dad mm-hmm. died, you know, but she's almost 80 years old now. And she'd never had any trouble with her heart since then.
Hmm.
But she had about...
Just under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is, you got to San Francisco, and that's when your father contacted you back?
Well, I was there back at Fort Mason there. It was in Richmond, right out of San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if they told us, you know, that, we came back, that we needed rest, so they just told us to kind of take things easy. So mm-hmm. we just hung around the barracks, and about the only work I did was they used to send us to the mess hall to help, you know, KP.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't that because we were punished, it was just more like a detail.
Yeah.
So we'd go over there, you know, and help peel carrots or potatoes or whatever. And, you know, just. So I, one evening, the CO came in there and told me that I was wanted in the office. So they told me my dad had wired some money, so I should go down Western Union and pick it up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That my mother was ill, but they didn't tell me exactly what was wrong. And I thought, I don't know what could be wrong with her, you know, because she was never really sick or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I said, okay. So she said, well, go back to the barracks and pack you or whatever you're going to take. She said, and we'll send a car down there, she said, to take you to the airport, you know. So I remember it was raining, you know. It was on Sunday. So I went back to the barracks, and I told one of the girls, I said, I got to get down to Western Union. I said, pick up some money. And come to find out it was Sunday, so Western Union was closed.
Mm.
So I couldn't get the money till the next day, you know. And I was kind of worried then, so I said, I got to leave tonight. So one of the sergeants, she was one of the ones that I joined up with back in Minneapolis. Her name was Marie Brunel.
Hmm.
And she made a sergeant, you know, and she was there. So she comes up there right away and she says, oh, Chris, she said, you know, is there anything I can do to help? So I told her, I said, well, I don't think I can make it out of here tonight because it's like I have to wait till tomorrow for the money. So she says, oh, forget about it. She said, we'll manage. So right away she went, you know, and she comes back and she had her hat, you know, and she said, here, she said, and she had asked everybody to, you know, for to loan me some money. So everybody was putting in. I said, well, did you keep track of who? And she said, oh, yeah, they all remember, she said, you know. So I said, well, when I come back, I said, I'll get that money from Western Union. And I said, I'll pay it all back to them. She says, oh, she said, they're not that, you know, they don't really expect payment so soon. She said, you can take all your, you know, all the time you need, she said. But what happened was we got to the airport and it was raining so hard. They said the planes are all grounded. So I thought, oh. So we were going to go back, you know. And one of the girls come up with a bright idea. She says, you know what? She said, there's an army transport plane that's heading out of here for England. She said, I wonder, she said, if they would give her a ride. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I said, will it cost me anything? She said, no, she said, it's free. She said, you know. But she said, we have to see if they'll take you. She said, okay. I said, so we went down there. Sure. They said, how far? You know, ooh, that thing was cold, you know, just
What did it look like?
It was like a warehouse, you know. So and all you got to sit on was a wooden bench, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting back there. But you know what? I didn't know that plane was full of moms. They were taking them to England.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it at the time. And I was, if I'd known that, I would have been so scared in all the storm, you know. And
oh, really? Was there anyone else on the plane with you?
Yeah, there were some soldiers.
And yeah. Where did they land then?
They stopped in some military base in Illinois. And that's where I got off, and I went into Chicago, and from there I caught the train home.
Oh. So that is scary going on a plane like that.
But it didn't take me long to get there. That was a whole thing of it.
Well, coming back overseas, from overseas too, you said you flew.
Oh, but that was a little bit nicer plane.
Right.
It wasn't like that one.
Coming back from overseas, did you make stops on the way?
Yeah, they stopped in Hickam Field in Honolulu, but it's like they didn't let us get off the plane. So that was my glimpse of Hawaii.
And then you landed in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
After you went home and came back, then how much longer were you in the service?
Well, that's when my father said, because the Red Cross told him that they would make arrangements for me to be discharged if under the conditions that I was needed at home.
Was your mother in the hospital then?
Yeah, she was. So my dad, you know, right away he was all for it, you know. I wasn't too anxious to get out, you know. You know, that's a funny thing about when after you've been in the service like that, it was almost 3 years, you know, and it's kind of frightening to, I guess that's the way a prisoner feels when he gets out of penitentiary or something. It was like, I was different, you know, and to go back out there, things weren't the same. And it takes you a long time to adjust, you know.
When would you have been discharged normally? Like when you were
They didn't say how many years.
You could just stay as long as
you Yeah, I could have stayed in as a career or something, you know.
Have you thought about doing that?
Well, at the time I didn't, but I probably would have, you know, I don't think I would have either. Because at that time, you know, like I started going with my husband and Well, he was talking about getting married and all that, and I thought it over and thought it over, and then after a while I thought, why not? You know, it's kind of
like... Well, was he a career army?
No, he got out after. Mm-hmm. He was in there for about 5 years, I guess, mm-hmm. and then he just...
So he had just joined
after the war stopped and everything, he got out. So in the meantime, you know, we got married, and no. Here I was going to go home and get my discharge.
Oh, so you were still in the service when you got married.
Yeah.
When was it? What
that was, let's see, I came back from overseas in 43, and this was around about in October, I think, of that, of 43.
No, 44.
44.
Yeah.
And I was going to get out in about a month or so, you know, because they had told me that they were working on it. So in the meantime, you know, like, I was just there, you know. So they told us, you know, we could take a leave or, you know, they used to give us a weekend leave and all that. So I went in there and asked them if I could have 7 days off, and she said, sure. And she says, where are you going? So I said, I'm going to Long Beach. And she says, okay. So she fixed up my papers. And so I got on a train and came down. And that's where I met him down here. And right away he says, oh, he said, you came. He says, I went and got the marriage license and everything. But then it was funny because, you know, at that time, they had this law in California that whites couldn't marry Indians or Orientals or Mexicans or blacks, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what they called it. What's that law that they have? Miscegenation or something?
Oh,
yeah.
Then.
And
was that because of the border?
No, this was a law that was here in the state of California before, I guess, the war and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Because... like they had it was only the Orientals at first, you know, but they included all the minority groups. So when we came down here, we came to Los Angeles here, and they didn't come out and tell us, you know, that, you know, we can't allow it or there's a law. They sort of got around it, you know, and said, you know, that because I didn't have a birth certificate. And I thought, look at funny thing, because we showed them our army ID cards and everything, you know. You know, if they wanted to, they could check, you know, how old I was and all that. And then it was kind of weird because anybody knew that you had to be 21 to, you know, get in the Women's Army Corps at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I was only...
Right, 18
years. Yeah.
18 years.
But at the time, I didn't know too much about, you know, what was going on in California. So I just, I told Chuck, I said, well, I don't know. I said, this is the only time I can come down here. So he says, well, I'll find a way. So the next morning, he told me to meet him down here at Long Beach. So I came down, and we were at the city hall. And I came in there and he says, hurry up. He says, I found a judge that's going to marry us. And I looked at him and he says, come on. He said, so I went in there and I remember his name was Judge Still. But one time I seen his picture in the papers that he died, you know. And I thought, there's that judge that married us. And he took our life, you know, the applications, you know, he looks at it and he said, who the hell put this down here? And I said, the lady that sold us the license, you know. And he just crossed out American Indian, you know, and he puts Caucasian.
Oh, no.
But see, he said that since I was from out of state, and he said, what difference is that going to make? He said.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what he was talking about at the time, but afterwards I thought, I don't know what the title was. So he married us, and it was about noon. And I'll never forget, because we left there, and we were so hungry, we went to eat. And they used to have, in those days, meatless days, you know, and all these ration stamps, you know, that they had, people had to get meat. And so we went into this restaurant, and no meat. So my husband was sitting there, he's looking at the menu, and he says, I don't know, he says, what's, so I told him, he says, scrambled eggs and lox. He said, what's that? Oh, that's good. I said, oh, he was mad at me because he didn't like it, you know. He said, why'd you tell me that?
Oh, dear. Well, where is he living at this time? Where did he met you here, but he was stationed here in Long Beach?
No, he was on a ship. He wasn't really.
Was in between.
Well, his ship was actually, their home port was Mare Island, up north of San Francisco, that little town, Vallejo, because that's where I went to live after we got married, and I got the service.
So he after you got married, you went back up to San Francisco, and he went back on the ship?
Mm-hmm. And any time the ship came in at Mare Island, he'd come in. After I got the service, well, I had to go back up to Richmond at the time. And then they let you out of service, you got to go into the hospital. And they put you through all these different tests and all that. That's to make sure that you're okay, because later on you might say you got an injury and expect a government pension or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, if you have an injury or something, you say that you're service connected. So to protect themselves, they put you through all kinds of physical examinations, x-rays and all that, to see if you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes about 2 weeks, you know, they just take their sweet old time. So you're in a hospital there, you know, you're not sick or nothing. I used to go wandering all over, oh, I got so tired of it. And they take your clothes away, so all I had was this white nightgown with the ties in the back, a gray robe, you know, army robe, and I'm walking around there. That's all I did was walk around, and sometimes I'd go down to the auditorium, they'd show movies, and back to my bed.
Yeah, you must have felt strange having probably wounded people in the hospital too. And
yeah, there was a lot of soldiers, and they had these wards full of but the ward that they put me in, this was funny, because it was full of women that were having, they were wives of servicemen.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all in there. Some of them were pregnant, and some of them were having some kind of female trouble that they were trying to get. But they were all wives of servicemen, you know. And, well, I guess by that time I was a wife of servicemen. But that's how I felt, like I was kind of, I don't know, isolated from them. You know, I couldn't really, you know, sit down and talk to them, you know, like they were from a different world, you know. Because a lot of them had children already.
And they hadn't been, you mean, in the service at all? But they
No, they were just wives, you know. Well, we used to say civilians, you know, that's what they were. But a lot of them, they were talking about, you know, oh, when the last baby I had was, you know. And I would sit there and I thought, you know, I just felt really, you know, out of place or something. And I thought, oh, here I go again or something, you know. So after 2 weeks, that's when they finally gave me my discharge.
Now, when was this?
This was in, let's see, it was around about July 44, I think. No. Let's see, it was October, November. It was after Christmas, I know.
So 45.
45, it was about, I think it was about the middle of January mm-hmm. when I got my discharge. And they had some, she was kind of like a social worker or something at the hospital. She found me an apartment, and she came and picked me up in her car.
Hmm. They're in Richmond?
Mm-hmm. But then I didn't stay at that apartment for about a month, and then I moved up to Vallejo. So in the meantime, I started, because I didn't know my way around at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the few weekends I'd go into town, but it was just certain places I went, and then I...
Were you all by yourself then, too?
Yeah, by then I was by myself. And, when I got my apartment there, the girls that were still there, they came to visit me one time, and they thought it was so nice, and I felt so bad because I missed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they got ready to leave, you know, I thought it was so lonely, like, you know. But while they were there, I was, we were just talking, you know, and it was funny because I was talking about somebody, and I said, oh, you know, I said, she's just a civilian, you know. And Marie looks at me, and she says, well, what do you call yourself?
I'm sure it would take a while to get out of the feeling. So were you still feeling scared about not being in the service anymore and being out in the...
No, I knew that I was going to have to get adjusted and all that. And the thing about it, see, all my plans to go home was kind of gone. Because I wanted to stay out here with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my dad was kind of disappointed about that. But my mother, she wrote me and she said she was happy, you know, that she knew I was out of service. And they found out I was married, you know, and they were happy about that, you know. And they said, you have to come back, you know, you have to, we want to see our son-in-law. So I never did go back. I mean, I went for a visit and all that, but I never did go back to live.
You never went back home?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd go back for a visit. Maybe the longest I've ever stayed is a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd come back out here.
How did they feel about marrying an Italian German?
Well, my mother and father, by then they knew that I was always sort of the kind of a child that did what I wanted to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they always figured everything I did turned out for the best anyway, you know. So they never questioned, you know, my why I did this, or they didn't like this. They never voiced their opinions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my father, all he said was, he said, I hope he's a good guy and treats you good, he said. So I said, oh, he will. And my mother started laughing because she said, if he doesn't, he said, he's going to have to learn. He's meaning that I would teach him, you know. So it was okay, but some of my father's brothers, they kind of objected. Because this one, his name was Bill, he fought over in Germany, and he was in Italy too. So right away, you know, he kind of Italian and German, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I hear you married one of those. He said, oh, he's an American. I said, you mean he's born here and everything? Still, he says, after what I've been through, he said, I don't think I could. And he didn't finish. So I said, that's okay. I said, I'll give you a warning. I said, when we're going to come back. I said, so you can go hide. But other than that, my parents got along good with my husband. In fact, my mother used to say, up until, it's been about a year ago since I lost him, but she used to always say, you know, how's my son, you know? She never said my son-in-law, she used to say my son.